we wanted to use our collective skill sets to find a way not to start a charity or to raise money, but to start a movement, a campaign about putting yourself in their shoes. Empathy.
Never quit. Team Never Quit Radio.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the TNQ podcast. I'm your host, Marcus Luttrell. Every week, it's my job to fire you up, to ignite the legend inside of you, and to push you to your greatness. Join me every week as I take you into my briefing room with some of the most hard-charging people on the planet. They're going to show you how to embrace the suck of life, teach you the values of working your ass off, and charge through whatever life throws at you. This is the Team Never Quit podcast. So buckle up, Buttercup.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of the Team Never Quit podcast. As always, thank you guys for listening and watching, and please don't forget to hit that like and subscribe button wherever you get your show. So today, before we get to our special guest, let's get to our weekly Patreon question of the day. And today we have you ever made a crazy kitchen mistake? And I'll also rephrase this because I know my mom's had one recently. A living room mistake.
Mm. Yeah. So for Christmas, we light Advent candles. Mm-hmm. Like on Sunday, you light it. And, mm-hmm. So the little thing that I bought on Amazon to hold the Advent candles was very janky. And it wasn't holding the tapered candle in very well. And so I kind of mushed the candle down to where it wouldn't fall over.
Sure.
And I thought I did it well enough. And thank the good Lord, I was sitting at the kitchen table with our friend Maria.
Maria was there.
And another friend, Kayla. And we were talking, and all of a sudden, I see a big flame shoot up. And I stand up. The tapered candle had fallen into my nativity scene.
Oh, no.
I mean, that's the worst thing that could possibly happen. Oh, yeah. Yeah, and it just, and the nativity, just bought it this year. It was beautiful, like real pretty fabric, and it just caught flammable. Up in flames, and the fire got to be about 6 feet high.
Oh, my God.
We used that flammable blanket you Instagram. And I think those are meant for grease fires.
Oh.
So we threw it on there, and it did bring the height of the flame down, but it spread the flame out.
Oh, no.
So
y'all taking notes out there?
Yeah. So I had these little spray can, like an aerosol can. I forget what they're called now. We're going to have to put this in.
It's an easy spray.
Easy spray. And it's like a little mock fire extinguisher, but it doesn't spray that nasty foam everywhere. Yeah. It's like a straight line. That got the fire out immediately. That little thing, everybody needs those. And we are not sponsored.
Well, I was going to say, what a great.
I'll tell you what. Yeah. I was like, I don't know what to tell you. There's a fire. I sprayed this on it and the fire went out.
It went out.
Itself.
Yeah. The blanket.
And not
spread
the blanket. Now, I don't want to say that the blanket's not necessary. I think that would be good for where there's nothing else flammable around it, like a grease fire if you're throwing it over a pot or something. But for a regular fire, all it did was bring the fire down and spread it out. So it was a hot mess. It was a lot of frantic running around for a minute, but we did get the fire out, and it didn't, thank God, didn't spread.
Yeah.
I remember getting the craziest call from you after that.
Yeah, I was almost hyperventilating because, you know, when like in the moment of chaos and you're really calm and you take care of everything, but then afterwards, it hits you, and you're like, oh my gosh, what just happened? That's how I was.
Yeah.
And I didn't want, Marcus was out of town with Morgan, and I don't like worrying him when he's out of town. Sure. So as soon as he walked in the door the next day, I told him, like, there was a fire in the house.
Confession.
The table was burnt.
You're going to see it anyway.
Yeah, the table was burnt.
I heard that story third hand from, well, Maria's version right away. So I knew that it happened.
Yeah, and, you know, it was scary.
It is scary.
And then I called Father Chris to come bless the house because I'm like, we burnt Mary, Joseph, and Jesus. I mean, burnt. They burn up.
That's funny.
But yeah.
What about you?
Scary.
Kitchen or living room, or could we expand
just
it?
House.
How about a house?
Yeah.
So, house yes, in 2020, my a house next door to me, which my parents lived in, who were at the time 83 and 81, and a small fire started in their garage, and my mom came running over to my house frantically to say, we need a fire extinguisher, there's a fire at the house. So I'm thinking a little kitchen fire. I grab the fire extinguisher, go running up the hill, and my parents' house was completely engulfed in flames, all three garages. There was a car in the garage that was a hybrid. So as you know, those batteries are so it basically annihilated my parents' home, burnt it to the ground. Poor father, he's passed away since, but he was suffering from dementia, so my mom, when she ran over, had left him alone in there, and he thought, in his mind, going outside and getting a fire hose, going back in to the exploding garage might be a good idea. So,
oh my gosh,
managing, elderly's home being burnt down and kind of managing their frantic behavior, and then the aftermath of the, you know, everything that burnt down and was lost was part of kind of what I want to talk about today.
Yeah.
is why this book came to fruition and why it's so important.
Wow, that's crazy.
Yep.
Mine was over Christmas too. I don't know where she was. I was by myself in the house. I had Scrooged on the TV with Bill Murray.
Yeah.
And I was cooking something in the stove. And our living room and our kitchen are one big room, and we have vaulted ceilings.
Right.
Probably, what are they?
The kitchen's 12 feet.
The living room?
Living room's 25
feet. 25 feet. This is an important part of the story. So I turn the burner on, and I'm watching. And then right in the scene where the Ghost of Christmas Past is coming in. No, excuse me. Future.
Uh-huh.
I walk into the bedroom to check on something, and I got kind of sidetracked or whatever, and I was in there for a minute, and I come walking back out into the living room, and I couldn't see anything.
Oh, no.
There was a cloud of black smoke. I mean, black. Completely filled the room.
From the oven
or the stove?
I had to get on
my hands and knees from the stove. So what had happened was the oil had caught on fire, got so hot that one of the fan knobs, I guess, fell. This is how I saw this. The fan knob fell from the top of the fan into that pan on the stove, caught fire.
Yeah.
Completely filled the house full of smoke, excuse me. And I'm hands and knees going over there to see what happened. And finally, I get over there, turn it off, and I look in there, and it's just that thing was in there burning. I never told anybody about
that. That happened to our knob.
She comes back. The knobs are burned off. Our backsplash is white granite and marble and stuff like that.
Yeah, black.
You can still see it.
Yeah.
Right. You can still. That's what that is. And I mean, I'd clean that thing for hours trying to scrub that out of there. And I had all the doors open.
That's a new weathered look now.
Yeah, that happened to me.
Y'all are just tearing up the house.
Yeah, we definitely have some stories.
We've been through a lot.
Fire is no joke. Yeah. And it can engulf.
I couldn't tell you how that happened.
And it happened so fast.
Yep.
Yeah.
How about you?
Man, I don't have any
good
crazy stories
way.
Like that.
You're too young.
You understand me? Keep it
just
that
live
way.
A few more years.
Yeah, just your typical, like, maybe cooking pizza rolls in the oven too long and a little fire
alarm goes off.
Your younger brother, Axe, tries to blow up the microwave all the time with that macaroni and cheese.
He has broken the microwave.
Caught the microwave on fire.
Because he caught it on fire. He forgets to put water in the mac and cheese. You know, like the bowls that are pre-done and all you have to do is add water. He forgets to add water and he just puts it in.
He did. He doesn't anymore.
He's done it multiple times though. And so now he just says,
sure,
I will
just
not.
Him out and his friends are going to be like, hey.
Yeah. He will not use the microwave anymore. He's like, I'm done.
Well, you learn from your mistakes, not from your successes. So.
Yeah, that happened. All right.
Yeah.
That's a good question.
That's a good one.
This, what you're on here for, awesome idea. Like I told you earlier, it's probably one of the greatest ideas I've seen since the Bible. I mean, I have multiple of these laying around, but to put it all, condensing it all into one, great idea.
Well, Melanie's been, I've been consulting with Melanie about this for years. So it's I'd say it's a good idea that took about 6 years to come to fruition.
Well, great idea.
Since it's a side, it does. Especially when you're working on it, alongside a full-time job. So
let's back it up and let's introduce you to everybody and tell you how you and I met and how we got here.
Great.
All right. So you're a Texas girl. You came into my life right when I got out of the Navy.
Yeah.
Correct?
Yes. Soon after the book Lone Survivor came out, before the movie.
And what do you do for a living?
I'm an orthodontist.
That's right.
Yes.
An awesome one.
Thank you.
You're welcome. If you weren't on the other side of Texas, which is basically being on the other side of the earth, we'd probably be over there with you all the time.
Oh, she was actually working on Addie in the living room last night.
I had to do the living room last night, and she's got a pair of pliers in there. Just pliers. It's the wire cutters.
Cuticle clippers.
Yeah, when kids are in pain, I can clip their wires and use household tools to do it. So,
I'm the chauffeur in the family. I just took them to their orthodontist, which our orthodontist is great. I mean, walk in there and they got pictures of paintings of Ferraris everywhere. It's an experience. I mean, I enjoy going there.
Yeah.
But then they always try to get out of the whole braces concept. And I feel like
the kids
we discussed,
do.
Of course, it's a rite of passage.
Sure.
You're going to suffer a little bit with that metal.
Right, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. So backing up to how we met Sherry, Marcus and Sherry met right before Marcus and I met, within 6 months or so. I feel like our whole relationship, the three of us, evolved around the same time. But how did you actually, because you, like we said, you're an orthodontist. How did you get into this world?
I always say that my experience with Marcus is probably very different than how he experienced it, because it's that way with everything, right? So for me, my memory and the importance that you have been in my life was really a big shift from being a successful orthodontist career woman who went through life pretty much checking the boxes, following the rules, and doing everything as I look back now, I would say a bubble. So go to high school, go to college, go to dental school, go to ortho residency, get out, get a job, start your family. And not a lot of thought had ever gone into exactly how, appreciation or understanding of so many things that had gone on around my life that I may not have been paying quite enough attention to, as to how I was able to get to where I was and living the life I was living. I felt very successful, very privileged, very comfortable. My kids lived a comfortable life. And one day, locally in my town, I do like to do a lot of community service, and I had volunteered to help a military fundraiser event happen, and I didn't know a lot about the military. No one in my family had served, so I probably could have, at the time, I was about 40 years old and could name the four branches, but didn't really understand or know anybody first person who had served. So in preparation, I'm also a researcher. So in preparation for this event I was going to help raise money for, I decided to read a book. And the friend recommended Lone Survivor. Not the type of book I would have typically picked up, but I was taking a trip, read it poolside, and it took me maybe a day and a half to get through it, and couldn't put it down, and was hit by this pretty very profound sense of guilt that I had not been paying enough attention to the people that go over and sacrifice so much for this life. I'm reading this poolside at a resort, and what have I done for people like you? So the book was kind of a brick wall for me. And as I went into this charity event, I thought, I need to use my skill sets a little differently. I think there's something I could do here, but I didn't know what it was. So soon after, a couple of very close girlfriends were going through difficult times. Two of them happened to be going through a divorce. That would get the phone calls or the visits. And as they sort of walked through their troubles, my suggestion to them was, take a look at this book, read this book, and then let's talk. And I wanted them to put their troubles in perspective. So if they think they're having a bad day, look at what a really bad day could look like.
Mm-hmm.
And these two friends had the same sort of reaction to the book that I did and said, I want to help you with this event that you're putting on because I now feel called to do something. This little group grew into five girls, five friends, very close friends to this day. And we started, we wanted to use our collective skill sets to find a way not to start a charity or to raise money, but to start a movement, a campaign about putting yourself in their shoes. Empathy. How do we connect with this community that we don't know a lot about? None of us did. We had our own backstories and our own connections to military in our own way. But for the most part, we were all in the same place in life, ready to do something. So we came up with this creative idea to get a pair of combat boots, take a civilian, switch shoes with them, put them in the military shoes, symbolic and literal, and take a really good-looking image of this and show people, like, I'm standing in their shoes in solidarity with our military. We were at war at the time. This was 2009. So we were at war at the time. Marcus, you just...
I just got back.
You just got back. Your book was out. Obviously, it was new. It was a bestseller. You, in my mind, were an untouchable or unreachable celebrity. It would have never... No plans to get to know Marcus at the time. Just really wanted to do my part in my little sector
of the
world.
That Texas thing cuts through a lot.
Mm-hmm. It does. So what was interesting is we started this movement or this campaign of putting yourself in their shoes, and we started 6 degrees of separation, finding people of influence. So celebrities, Joe Nichols, Casey Musgraves.
I remember Charlie Daniels. When he came online,
yep.
Dolly.
Yep. Rick Perry.
Yeah, Rick Perry.
Rick Perry's one of the first.
Bunch.
That's how it started. We sort of inspired by the Got Milk ads. You know, what if we did this repeat image of celebrities putting themselves in their shoes and using, you know, exploiting their fan base to see it. And it worked. And we started getting phone calls like crazy. And the first phone call we got after that first series of photos was taken was from Rick Perry.
Yeah.
And he said, how quickly can you get to the Capitol? I want to get my boots on. And that was where that tagline came from.
Of course.
So we started a
move. How about that man?
That man. Amazing.
How about that guy?
I know.
Are you kidding me with him?
Yeah. Very grateful. So that's where the movement started. And over the course of the next few months, the campaign started getting some attention, and some attention was there were some bad actors getting attention from those that wanted to take the campaign, use the campaign a little bit differently than what we had envisioned. So when I asked those people to stop sharing the photos because they were doing it without permission and sort of making them not look in great light, I got a phone call that was a little bit scary and threatening. And I didn't know what to do. I didn't know anybody to call except for one military former general, 3-star Leroy Sisco.
Who knows everybody.
Who knows everybody. Called General Leroy Sisco. I know that I was in tears at the moment because I was frightened by the phone call. And he said, stay where you are. Don't move. I'm going to call you back in 5 minutes. And the next, within 5 minutes or less, my phone rang and it was you. And it was the guy that inspired my movement and recognized your voice from interviews I'd seen you do. And your words to me were, I just got a phone call from General Sisco. And I understand I need to make some heads roll. Tell me what happened.
You'd be surprised what a general can get done.
I know. So we talked, and we went through it. It really ended up being not a big deal.
Send me in for my specialty.
Exactly. Right. And you said at the end of that conversation, I want to help you with this boot campaign. When can you come down and take my photo? And that was when we met.
Yep.
So, what month was that?
That was March of 2010, and Morgan had just deployed the day before.
That's right.
So I didn't get to meet Morgan. You were living in Huntsville.
That's right.
At mom's at
the ranch,
and you in the Seal House.
I was living with my mom.
You were. You
I got were. My ass kicked so bad, they sent me back to my mother. Fine. That happened to me.
Yeah.
You were in your own house, though.
Yeah.
But it we doesn't did. Matter. My friends don't see it like that.
But we did a great photo shoot, and it was really the start to a magical future for getting people inspired, and you were a great microphone and voice, and you know, you've always been such a support for military causes, and
that's when everything started speeding up.
It really did, yeah.
And the boot campaign just caught on wildfire. After that.
It did.
I mean, to the UFC, to the Sons of Anarchy,
to the Shamu trainers at SeaWorld.
Yeah,
you know, just
the Rock had them on.
The Rock, yeah. the Dolly Parton.
And you get Dolly in something. I mean, what are we even talking about, right?
There were so many people supporting the movement. Then I met you in June. So just a few months later. In June of 2010 at the first gala. Mm-hmm. And my dad had met you before.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
And so I had heard about you. And I was excited to meet you because dad thought the world of you. And I just immediately fell in love with all of the boot girls.
Oh, there's some. That's a great crew.
It's a special.
How about them?
And we're still so close.
They're so amazing.
Yeah. Everyone with a great heart, intention, all in this, you know, incentives and values align. And even though we live in different places and we don't see each other every day, the closeness and the bond that we have, that mm-hmm. shared bond, has been tremendously valuable in my life.
I got one of them still shows up here all the time.
I know. Maria. I think she has a room.
We're blessed to have her.
Believe me, she's special.
She's special. Can you give us some highlights of what the boot campaign accomplished during your tenure there?
Yeah. So, you know, the boot campaign is a national charity now, and it's doing some great things for the mental health space of veterans, raising a lot of money.
Oh, it's grown and changed.
It's grown. So we're talking about changed,
from this
yes.
is where we started.
Yeah. I would have to say my skill set's more in the awareness and excitement side of things.
There's nothing wrong with something growing like all of those charities
yeah,
that we were in did.
Right. I'm not a fundraiser. Not my skill set. That it needed to go in the hands of people that were better with that. But it wasn't designed to be a charity originally. It was really designed to be a movement and mm-hmm. a mindset change and a patriotic awakening. So how do you become a patriot and really love this country and love the people that sacrifice so much for that? So it was a little something that five girls did that we thought was just happening local to where I live. It became a big thing nationally once Hollywood got behind it.
Yeah.
And it
when the Suns grabbed hold of it
yeah,
and then that whole thing
right.
kind of going.
And the beauty, I think, of the group was that we were it seemed like we were chasing celebrity for the sake of being close to celebrity, but really our goal was to exploit them in the benefit of the military. Like, they've got a fan base.
No,
that's
the different.
Least they can do.
No. We weren't chasing anybody. We were in there with them.
Right.
It's almost
we got put in there together
right.
when all that was going down.
Right.
And
I saw them.
Together.
You could see the difference when those that were doing it for their own image and those that were really doing it because they cared. And the ones we worked with long term, I mean, those people, I still to this day have so much respect for Zach Brown and
the Sons of the
Rodeo. Oh, my
we
gosh.
About
yeah.
Last night.
You know,
go
I mean,
him.
He genuinely. Yep. Would do anything, and there was no.
How about that crew?
Yeah, I'm telling you. So, I have such great memories of some great people that stepped up and did. Troy Aikman, another one who just stepped up and did it without
him too. And Joe, but man, that
yep.
whole crew.
The actors of Lone Survivor all did it on set.
Oh yeah,
they all took pictures.
And, yep. Mark Wahlberg, yep,
on set.
Yep, The Rock.
Yeah,
we spend all day talking about their goodness. Let's talk bad about them.
Well, I kind of compare it to USO, even though you're not going overseas,
sure.
but it is this awareness. But you would also host these events where veterans would come out of the woodworks to attend.
They would and see.
And they got to be a part of, mm-hmm. and they like molded with the celebrities.
Correct.
So it was a really neat kind of spinoff of the USO,
right.
really.
Yeah.
And that just started happening everywhere.
It did.
Just wasn't. What we did, I mean, that started happening. I'd run across my guys and be like, hey, man, you ever been here to so-and-so? I met so-and-so. I was like, no. He goes, man, they're doing this thing, and it's amazing.
Yeah. So we have to give credit to the cast of the Sons of Anarchy. That was a really unique story. The five boot girls that had we had sort of made our little wish list. One day we just sat down for fun and said what would be the top five influencer we could chase and see if we could get to them and get them excited about our campaign. And of course, Heather's was all sports related, and Leanne's was a little bit more politically related, George Bush, etc. And mine was, I had started watching this show in season one called Sons of Anarchy at the time. This is years ago, and not a super well-known show, but I was hooked, and so I was like, man, this is biker show that I love. It does.
I bet we've been watched three seasons in a row.
So I made a cold call to the PR director at FX Network, and he returned my call, and he said, so let me get this straight. What you want me to do is you want me to get this cast of 25 on set in costume wearing these boots all on the same day for a photo shoot. And I said, yeah, I do. And he said, well, number one, we're on hiatus. Nobody's filming right now. Number two, we film in little sections. Yeah. No, we're never together all at once, and we're never all in costumes. This isn't going to happen. And I said, take my name and number if you ever would like to. It's a really great cause. I think that it would love to see some version of this go down. It was 3 months later. That same guy's name is Dominic, called me and said, hey, do you remember that photo you asked me for? And I said, yes. He said, I think if you could get a photographer and 25 pairs of boots here in these various sizes by Wednesday, I can make it happen in costume on set. Took a deep breath, like I do, and said, it will be done.
How now, square away is that guy, though, for remembering that?
Yeah.
Dominic,
do you remember
that? Dominic?
Yeah, for doing that?
Yeah. Yeah. No, it was a little bit crazy getting it done. Flew Maria out there, had to get the boots, but it was real. And
send in Maria. You
got to put that shot up and show your audience what that looks like. Yeah. That was probably that. One of the most, because it was organic, it was real. And every single cast member then said, we will lead a bike rally. We did three or four motorcycle-led Sons of Anarchy bike rallies out of that.
That was
cool. The coolest biker gang I've ever hung out with. I run around with the Angels, and they were there.
Yes.
And they fell in line. I mean, we rode down when they shut that LA freeway down, and we were five across with the Anarchy boys going down. That is one of the coolest things I've ever been a part of.
Yeah, agreed. Great memory.
It was. And I think about it. I remember looking across, seeing Charlie and all them guys just riding and just thinking, and Kim and all of them, like, man, how the hell did we get here, man?
Uh-huh. It was really cool. And I, not a biker person at all, could be the furthest from any of my interests, but being part of that, it was a really special moment. And just seeing how y'all just dominated the area, like shutting the highway down.
I remember driving, thinking all the people on the side trying to get on the freeway. I was like, man, there, California's got to be pissed.
The
traffic, right?
It was really cool. Yeah. So the boot campaign went through a lot of different phases changes. When did the boot girls step back and hand it over to
real fundraisers and to real well, I think that we built into it, since none of us ever started this to become a day job, a full time. None of us ever took on a salary. It was all volunteer. We sat on the board, and we had put into the bylaws that the board limits were 10 years. So after 10 years, we started dropping off the board and handing it off, and sort of had our decade of the all-in volunteer time, which it can be somewhat drinking from a fire hose, especially when it's getting a lot of attention. And so we knew when it was our time to step back and let professionals run it.
Yeah,
that's a long time.
Yeah, it is.
That's putting work in for charity.
Yeah, but remember, we didn't start out to be a charity.
I get that.
So we sort of...
But I mean, supporting the troops, and I'm talking about charity as just one of your virtues.
Correct, yes. And it comes naturally. People are like, how can I help? And of course, money is always a help. But it was better in the hands of people that know how to better allocate those dollars to the right causes. I'm always said I'm not the best at knowing what the military needs for help, so I'm going to put that in the hands of those that have a little bit more close connection. I love what the boot campaign's doing now. I'm a big proponent for mental health
When you see the signs everywhere in the cities, parks, barbecue cook-offs, stuff like that, you roll through them and just, it's in there.
I mean, Marcus, you're on a boot campaign ad running down on a 18-wheeler truck.
Yes,
going down still. The road.
Me and Mr. Rigby.
Yep. You and Rigby, yeah.
How about that? Uh-huh.
That's from that original boot shoot we did when I came down that first time
Scott
we met
did
you.
That.
Yeah.
Yes, Scott O'Neill.
How about him?
Great guy.
That was the meeting all those people and keeping friends with them. Mm-hmm. That was the best thing that came out of that.
Really good group of people. And I've friendships and, I mean, not just friendships, family for a lifetime out of that experience. And, you know, you go through life, things happen, good and bad. And that has always been the family that has been there for me. And through good times and bad. And so I feel like there was a higher purpose for us all coming together. I think we did change some lives and did some great things.
We always had a great time.
We always had a great time.
Whatever kind of day or year you're having, whenever we would do something and throw down like that, it was always a great time.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, it was.
And y'all were even part of our wedding. I mean, all the boot girls were at our wedding. Maria,
we all like to take credit for y'all meeting. You do know that.
Yeah.
I don't go anywhere without them.
Okay.
Maria was our photographer. She still does our photography. Mm-hmm. She has taken pictures of Hunter since he was 12 years old. And still, I love how we're all still a family.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not just a friendship. We're all still very much a family. And
having to talk about Ginger. Ginger's special, too. Ginger's like the glue. I would say, you know, when you get five girls and everyone has a very unique and very different skill set, from creative Maria to event planning, Heather Leanne, there had to be a glue. And I would say Ginger was the fifth glue that kept us all together during all difficult times, good times, also so much fun, and voice of reason always.
And Heather and Leanne. I mean, Heather's so spunky and has just the best energy and light coming from her. Yeah. And she can just make anybody, like if she's asked you to do it, you're going to do it.
Right.
Because she's just full of light and happiness.
Yes.
Leanne is like, she just gets stuff done.
Yeah.
And she has a huge heart. All of y'all. Y'all are all great.
Truly unique skill sets. But we came together and worked, and so that was how we met.
Yeah.
That's a big thing, but it was a small thing that became a big thing.
So after you passed the torch for a boot campaign, you went back to what you knew as normal life.
Normal life, which always was, you know, I'd maintain normal life, but I was raising kids, and so the demand on my time had just gotten a little bit too much. And so I kind of slowed down, went back to spending more time away from volunteer work and away from travel and more time at home, continuing on my orthodontic practice. I was about in my 15th year, I would say, 10th, 15th year, second decade of doing that, which I love. Started to grow that. I'm still a practicing orthodontist. I brought my niece is now my partner, so I've grown that, opened a second office, and trying to see the light at the end of the tunnel here for slowing down retirement and doing some other things, because as you know, I'm a project girl. I love to do things that I'm passionate about. I love my day job, but I also really like to stay creative and keep my mind strong and fresh and learn. I love to be a student of new things. And so now my time is spent getting my kids launched. So they're in college now and working towards getting a little bit more freedom to travel more and do some other things that I love with a little bit of orthodontics on the side.
Yeah.
Is that how you got this done?
That's how I got this done. It took 6 years, but that's how I got this
done. So let's talk about that.
Okay.
You created the JIC book.
Yeah. So in front of us is a book that is, the story behind this book is I am the mother of two children, husband of a physician who's emergency based. So very, very, a lot of hospital time. A lot of the executive function of my family falls on my shoulders. And I was jogging. I was on vacation one time. I was jogging, and I thought, man, I have got to write so much down, because if something happens to me, my family is going to be very, very lost. So I came up with the name JIC Book, for standing for just in case. JIC was an acronym my kids were using a lot at the time, and I thought, yeah.
They were?
My kids were, yeah.
For just in case?
Yeah. It would show up in a text.
Okay, just in case, that's not what it meant, is what I'm saying.
Oh, no, that's what it meant. Yeah. So I thought, I'm going to call this JIC book, and I'm gonna create it for my family. And you know what? If it's good, I'm going to make it available to more people. Mm-hmm. So I jogged back to the resort, went straight up to the pool, and said to my husband, I've got an idea. What do you think? And he goes, I love it. Of course, this is someone who, if you asked him what the password is to the bank account, he'd have no idea. So, of course, he thought it was a good idea. So I started laying out the details of life in today's day and age with everything digital, with password protections and all of this. There's so much information we just keep in our heads.
Oh, that's what we're heading towards, too.
Yep. Then I started interviewing my friends. Melanie, I think I came to you, and I said, you've got a complicated life. Where do you keep everything? And I don't know. I didn't love your answer because I thought, are you sure that's safe? You know, and you guys know, I'm not going to say it now, but you told me kind of how you kept things. Mm-hmm. Melanie are very much alike with our organizational skills. And I was like, you don't use a password protector, or this, that, and the other.
But I also said that I keep a notebook.
You did. Yes. But my brain was like, okay, what happens if that notebook falls into the wrong hands? How mm-hmm. safe is this? This is big stuff here. So that you were part of that problem was what I was trying to solve as I put this book together. Now, a couple things about the book. I researched what's out on the market, and there are some pieces out there on the market. One is actually on Oprah's favorite things list this year called You're Dead Now, or Now You're Dead, What Now, or something like that. Strange.
It's a horrible name.
Well, strange branding, but it is a bound book. So I think if anything changes, you've got to rip a page out or you got to scratch it out. This is a notebook with 3-ring binders so that you can get new pages and update them regularly. It's narrative form, so it's a journal. You can talk to this book exactly how you would want to talk to your family. So if you want to answer one of the prompts in a way that would only make sense, Melanie, to you, to Marcus, Melanie from you to Hunter, or vice versa, you get to tell the book exactly what you want it to say in the way that you want to say it. And it's prompted you in completeness so that everything your family needs to know is all there. Mm-hmm. There will not be, you can leave breadcrumbs to the data, or you can put the data right in the book, but that depends on how safe you're going to protect that book. If you're just going to put it on your bookshelf in your library, you may want to leave breadcrumbs to the data. Mm-hmm. If you're going to put it in a safe or safety deposit box, you can just put the passwords right in there if you'd like.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, there's so much more that could go into that. Because when we took control of Valhalla, it came with a book. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I never anticipated this, but if I had, which was a binder just like this, and if I had no idea how many different types of light bulbs there are in a house.
Okay, yeah. Oh,
how many
yeah,
different
yeah,
types of sense. Air filters and right. the sizes what that you need in the house. And I always forget that. And when I go buy them and stuff like that, I was like, okay, where are the water shutoff valve in the damn house? You know, that stuff that you just gets overlooked, like what right. breaker system for guys?
Sure.
And so from your house to your car, what's your license plate number? Most people don't know that.
Right.
You know, to your social security stuff, like that important stuff that you keep in the freezer, this top secret, yeah, you can code those. And then there's some of the stuff like, hey, just what's the friggin' Wi-Fi password? Or what's this?
Right.
That kind of deal.
Right.
You overlook it, but all you have to do is write it down one time.
Right. And the book coaches you on if you want to keep all your passwords in an encrypted password keeper, such as LastPass, and then you just put the main master code into this JIC book. That you can do it that way, or you can put all your codes in there. It's really however you want to customize it. We deliberately did not make this a digital product because we are still fearful that this information is so sensitive that a lot of people would be fearful of putting it out there in today's day and age. And I think mm-hmm. with cyber attacks, that's just getting worse.
That is the opposite. mm-hmm.
About halfway into the creation of this book was when my parents' house burned down and they lost everything. So all of the information for my parents' estate was gone. We had to recreate it. A year later, my father passed away. And so my mom was left with very little details. There was life insurance that he had had from past jobs that she didn't know about. And it took us a lot of time to hunt all that down, get everything into the book. Had my father had, when he was of clear mind or he was cognitively able to get all this in one place, had a JIT book in his day and age, it would have been super helpful for my mom and a lot easier to navigate.
Especially for kids.
Like, my great uncle died a year and a half ago, and he handled everything. All the bills.
That's the biggest problem, is when one person does everything.
Correct.
Yeah. He handled everything. And my, and he had a different password for every single account. And my great aunt, I mean, these are, this couple is in their 80s, and she didn't know where to start and actually dropped into like a state of panic.
Sure.
Because she, and another problem is her name wasn't on anything. They'd been married since the 50s, and her name wasn't on one thing.
So it was very difficult.
And it was a very difficult time in her life.
I mean, you got to shut everything down.
There's a one unique thing about this book I want to point out is there's one page in the beginning of that called Circle of Trust. And there's one page where you can just put, you list five people who know the most about you. So it may be family member, it might be it might be your office manager, but whoever is the five people that would know the most needs to go into that book with their contact information. You know, one in my book is just the one person who I own some cryptocurrency. And there's not many people close to me that know how to access that, certainly not my family. Mm-hmm. So I've had to add a name in that circle of trust who I know will be able to interpret all of that and access that cryptocurrency on behalf of my family. And I trust them. So their name is in my circle of trust. And that's one unique piece.
There needs to be somebody on this planet that knows everything about you.
Yeah.
It takes a lot of stress off of you.
It is.
But if there's something that you try to keep from, I mean, just have a friend like that.
True.
It helps.
True. Mm-hmm. But it's rare that somebody's going to know everything. You're going to have, you know, you're going to piece that together. So this is a great way of doing that. It isn't, you know, people want to put this type of stuff off. We tried to design it less about death or less about passing on to the next generation. This is valuable now. This is a valuable if you, you know, you flooding, fire, hurricane.
Is this waterproof?
No, not waterproof. Need to put it in something waterproof. But
They got paper now. But once that's on there.
The idea is that you would grab this if you had to leave. You take it with you if your house is burning down. This would be the first thing you grab is your JIT book. Mm-hmm. And it would have everything in one place.
You know that drawer that everybody puts your junk in?
Yeah.
We have three of them.
Oh, goodness, I can't imagine. Yeah. But you're going to, which drawers?
Did you hear what I said, shortness? We have three of those suckers.
I'm pretty sure there's much more than three.
Okay, there's four. I didn't want to bring it up on national television, but we have four. My point with that is, you know, I got a lot of kids. It's ridiculous. But one of those drawers should hold this.
It should hold this. Yes, it absolutely should. But you've just told us that it's going to be in your drawer, so maybe we'll put it somewhere.
It'll definitely go in the safe.
Yeah. Every time this runs across the awareness of a CPA or a financial planner or a lawyer that deals with clients, they're like, oh my gosh, if my clients would just fill this out, my job would be so much easier.
Oh, yeah.
So it just, they're asking for this stuff.
Gotta give these to the kids, seniors in high school.
Yes, yes, yes.
There needs to be one of those classes.
Mm-hmm.
We should, I mean, education is a whole different department altogether.
Whole
other
topic,
I mean, we can
correct.
Talk about that all day long.
Right.
But there needs to be one class in your school that teaches you how to do cool stuff.
Yep.
Sherry, that should be a secondary JIT type book is
for the new grads.
For the new grads. Like,
when to college.
When to file taxes, how to.
Yeah, that's a great question.
I do think that'd be
so. When you left from high school and went to college for the first time, you went to LSU. That is a school for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we cut the cord off of you and sent you out that way. Was it overwhelming in the beginning?
It's not overwhelming if you find the right group. And
I feel like that's a good answer he gave. Did you see that?
Yeah.
It's honest.
And for Hunter, you went from a school of like 25 people in your graduating class to LSU. I think for someone that graduates from a normal high school, it wouldn't be as over. It's still overwhelming, but you specifically, that was a huge jump.
But I always wanted to get out of that and go to a bigger place.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I was overwhelmed, but excited.
What was some of the stuff you ran into that was a problem when you got there? Getting food.
Gas. I mean, they have they've got food and gas all over
there
the place.
There are no issues.
Yeah, everything's perfect for you, pal.
Yeah.
Well, I remember
good for you, son.
When we went up for a couple of times, like right as school was starting, I took you to the local post office. We got you a little box.
Yeah, so people don't have like, people to show them around like that.
Yeah. Yes, it would be
getting used to the layout of the land was probably the most difficult thing to first overcome, but I mean, once you get the hang of it, then it's really not bad.
But Hunter, you're just a big glass of lemonade. There's never lemons for you. I mean, you've always been that way. Just a big glass of lemonade.
I've never heard that before. Yeah,
I haven't heard that one either, but yeah. You're probably not wrong.
Yeah. Let me think about it. You know what? You're not wrong.
But this version of the book, I think every is a great wedding gift, a great graduation from college gift, great new baby, you know, as families grow, gosh, the relief you feel when everything is down and in one place. So when I leave town or I'm taking, my husband and I are leaving town, I leave this book and I tell my children, it sounds almost morbid, but I always make sure they're thinking about the JIC book just in case.
Mm-hmm.
In case something happens.
We don't say it like you say, just in case.
I know. I
mean, that's the thing. Then those will correlate.
Yeah. And it's got a place for letters if you want to actually. The other unique thing about the book is it's broken down into three sections. So section one is your most critical stuff. Most of the stuff's in your head. You got to get it out of your head and into that book for Melanie to know and vice versa. If you just make it through section one, your family's already better off. Section two takes a little bit of time because it wants more account numbers. You probably want to take a month and save up all the statements that come in the mail. So you have it in one place. Sit down and get section two done. That's very detailed on where everything is. Stuff you don't have in your head, you need to refer. Section three is your wishes and desires, stories, the things you want people to know. So section three is the bonus, the extra details about this is really what matters to me, and I'd like to tell this story to my family. So we designed it that way so that you, in priority, can work through a third of the book and still feel okay. The full book, awesome.
It'd be a great retirement gift, too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. People that are just now starting to think about, okay, what do we do?
My mother's a widow now, and she doesn't, every piece of mail that she gets that's relevant to finance, she puts in her JIC book.
Hey, you want
to
give somebody a good present? Fill this sucker out for them.
Well, yeah.
True. Those first couple parts?
Oh, yeah. Help them through it.
Help them through it?
Yep.
Like when I want something done, especially like out here working around, I'll start with one thing. I want to clean the whole back area back out of there. But I just don't have enough time to do that. So every day I go through there, I do one thing. I'll remove one thing.
Okay.
And then before you know it, it's done.
Right. You look good.
So like when I read the Bible, I read one page a day. Mm-hmm. I was like, with this, with something you want. Yeah. Right. Yeah. So if there's something that you want to get after, you break it down to the lowest common. I don't care what you're trying to do.
Right.
Start small and then work your way up.
So you'll fill that out one page at a time?
Yeah. One question at a time.
Okay. I like
it. It's like that.
Hey, you'll get there.
Well, and we can do it together. It'd be a good marriage thing just to do mm-hmm. together. Mm-hmm.
We were talking about that the other day. It was like, have you ever watched the movies where they play the couples play the marriage game? Like uh-huh. they ask them the personal questions
and stuff like that.
That I think that is just the greatest teacher. I was like, we literally got that game, sat down, and started asking each other questions to mm-hmm. find out stuff we didn't know.
It's almost like the Newlywed Show. Do you remember that game
show? Of course.
Show?
Yeah, that was great. That it's a great way to learn about your teammate, your spouse, your wife.
Well, I feel like
sit down and freaking ask them questions.
That sometimes the answers change over time, so it's good to continue to do it because your mm-hmm. interests change, you grow.
Right.
And
I've already had to update my JIC book multiple times as a property is sold. I need to get that off there and something's bought, but put that in there.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an ongoing activity for me and have become very dedicated to it. And the sense of relief that I have and my family has knowing it's there, we refer to it all the time.
Okay, so how did you actually get everything onto paper with a flow?
Did you take the idea down to an actual product? Well, I didn't do it by myself. So when I came up with this idea. I came home from that vacation, and one of my really good friends, her name is Veronica, is my co-partner on this project. She was in bed, sick with, she had just been diagnosed with lupus, and she'd had a pretty lengthy hospital stay and was in bed, could barely get out. And I went for a visit, took her some food, crawled in bed with her, and basically said, you know what? We need a project for you, something to just get your mind off this. And
sick and in bed, you know what you need?
You need to work.
You need to work, girl. So
that's what I'm talking about. Sure, good job.
Veronica's a very good writer, and I knew that I had, for the skill set for me was the content and what needed to go in it, but I don't have, I'm not a writer, and I didn't feel like my voice would be the way I would want this presented. And she has an eye for marketing and the look. So Veronica put a voice to this book. It looks the way that it does because of her, and she's in charge of all the PR and marketing and all the things that she has. So she's my partner on this, and I couldn't have done it without her, and it's been a lot of fun because she is the sort of the flip side of me, whereas I handle a lot of the executive function in the family. She felt like if something happened to her husband, she'd know nothing. Mm-hmm. So she was sitting in the other seat, and so together I wanted to get what was out in my head down onto paper. And for her, she wanted her husband to get down what was in his head on paper for her to be able to get mm-hmm. involved in. And it really brought them together in that way. So our story is written in the front of this book about her and I and the different things that we've gone through and different motivations for why the two of us together were really good partners on this project. So Veronica, she's not here today.
Good job, girl.
She's a big part of it.
That's awesome. I love that.
Great project. Excited to get it, you know, out there. And I think a lot of the financially minded leaders, Dave Ramsey's of the world.
That's different. It's a tool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's just right. So hopefully you guys will be you're really the first publicity that we've been doing. So appreciate the opportunity, and hopefully we'll be having some stories to get some watch this thing grow a little bit over time.
Grab the book for Valhalla and transfer it in.
Yeah, bring it in.
Yeah, we have a notebook, but I don't have, like, it just has copies of our driver's license, our passports.
Stuff written in the margins, old passwords have been one line, you know, all
that kind probably of stuff. Aren't any good anymore.
Anyway, exactly.
Correct.
Yeah.
I mean, do passwords expire?
Mm-hmm. Well, they'll make you update. Yeah, they'll make you change it. Yep. Oh, yeah.
That's one thing we brought this up. If, like, I don't know that stuff.
All right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep.
So if something happened, I'd have to shut everything down.
Right.
I'd have to reboot the entire system.
And it'd take you a while to get into everything. Because
then you can't shut some of it down if you don't have the passwords.
Correct. And then you got to go one by one. One by one. So you're going to spend a lot of time on the phone, a lot of time.
I heard one of those guys with that Bitcoin or something lost. He's got.
Oh, yeah.
He forgot his password.
Oh, yes.
And it deletes after a certain amount of time.
Anyone.
That might be one of the craziest stories I've heard in a while.
Yep. Cryptocurrency, big deal, because a lot of people, that's a challenging world to navigate.
I mean, that's a crazy story.
It is. I lost what? That probably worth billions.
Right? Something in there, locked in there.
Yeah, and I think he only had like 10 tries. That's right. He was on his last one.
If you're gonna do treasure, at least be tangible, bury it in the water, we can get to it.
If that story is fully true, that's crazy stories.
Internet tale.
Yeah.
Whatever we call those.
Right. So that's kind of where we are today, and
I love it. Well, thank you for sharing that.
Thank you for having me on.
Thanks for everything you've always done for us in the military, and it's been just an absolute pleasure to be in your life.
Oh, it doesn't feel like I've done much. I just comes from the heart.
You have a good time.
Yeah, it's just natural. Friends, that's what we do.
You are a project person.
I'm a project person, yeah.
You always have your hands in a million things. Actually, one of my favorite projects that you started and handed off was buying the car wash for your son.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
I think that's one of the coolest things I've ever heard. Yeah. There's this janky car wash on a corner.
It's janky, yeah.
Across the street from her kids' high school.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And it was up for sale. You buy it.
Yep.
And you hand it over to your son and said,
build this business.
Build this business. Yep. And he's in high school.
Yeah. Well, I like to say I have a little bit of an entrepreneurial spirit inside me. And I've noticed the younger generation these days, there's not much job opportunities out there for them. It's even hard for them to get a job sacking groceries. It's just tougher out there than it was when I was in their age. So I did. I thought, well, my son has a lot of this in this entrepreneurial spirit. That's what he says he would like to do, his business. And so found this very little falling apart car wash near his school. And I thought, and it was offered at a pretty low price. So I thought, if I bought that and allowed him and his friends to turn it around, work it, and learn how to build a business. This was not one of these multi-million-dollar car wash tunnels. It was a do-it-yourself, and it had one automatic unit you could drive in, touchless system. So I bought the land and the car wash, invested a little bit in new equipment, and then turned my son and three of his friends from school loose on it, all hard workers. And they ran that thing for 2 years. The last 2 years of their high school days, were in a car wash. You have to show up every day. That thing gets, you know, it's a 24-hour open. So you had to go clean it, blow it, keep it running, functional. You know, and customers aren't always nice when they, you know, lose 25 cents in the coin machine. So they had to understand customer service and how to be polite and. They did it, and they did it flawlessly. You know, I just didn't have to. I thought, oh, this is going to probably land on me, and I'm going to have to. And they did it just flawlessly. They handled the car wash. They learned how to grow a business. I had them run the books, do the payroll. They all had great jobs, summer jobs, and during school jobs. They also had other jobs as well because it wasn't full time. But it was a great experience, and when they all left for college, we just put it on the market and sold it and made money, and they all got little bonuses from the sale. So it was fun. It was a nice little investment, but more importantly, it was a good exercise, and I'm blessed to be able to invest in something like that. I do realize that, again, going back to my connection with you, Marcus, and that reading that book is, I do realize how fortunate I am to have the job that I have. And have the ability to invest in something like that for my children. But it's really important to me that they are hands-on, they do the work.
And, yeah, there's and so, a difference between just giving your kids money.
Yeah, no.
And then actually teaching them how to run something how to operate a business.
And that was my goal. And I ask him, I ask him often, you know, was that worthwhile? And he's, well, I didn't love running a car wash. I know I don't want to do that. But yeah, well, I learned a lot. And
that's how you learn that.
Yeah, you learn what you don't want to do. So really proud of him. He's a student up at OU now and studying business. So it's be fun to see where things turn out. And hopefully that will be something.
Good job, buddy.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. And then you've invested in a lot of things. You've got a movie that you've.
Yeah. So I try, you know, I have my day job, and then I try to do some things on the side that move me. That's if something keeps me up at night and has some deeper meaning, then I'll look at it and get involved. And recently I was shown a film about a topic, on a African root bark called ibogaine, which is is basically a psychedelic. They say has a lot of healing powers. I've never done ibogaine, don't have a lot of exposure to it, but I watched this screener film, and it was done by the same producer who made the Netflix series How to Change Your Mind, the Michael Pollan. He did a journalist, went in and did some psychedelic experiences with MDMA and psilocybin, etc. And they've made a film on. The topic is ibogaine, and they've incorporated a lot of the Stanford, I think Nolan Williams is a researcher out of Stanford who's followed a lot of the veterans. Marcus, you know a lot of these people that have gone down there and have had life-changing experiences with this medicine. And my passion is mental health. I think that we are facing a mental health crisis. I think it's why we have addiction and all of these things. I'm seeing this Ibogaine. This film talks about how it has applications to treat a very large, broad spectrum of symptomology, including addiction, removing the detox symptoms of that addiction, and then sort of creating neuroplasticity where you now have the choice, much better decision making on whether you want to choose that drug or choose not to do it. So seeing, and I have addiction runs through some, you know, family members that I've seen suffer, and it really ruined their life. So anything that I see power in that has a lot of promise, and the research is showing a lot of good things for that compound, I want to get behind it. So I'm investing in a film that's going to tell a story about the beginnings of Ibogaine, what they're doing with it now, the different people that are getting help from it. Of course, it's not legal in the U.S., so they're doing all this down in Mexico. And I am so excited because it really opened my eyes, like your book did for me back in 2009. This has opened my eyes to something new that I think is coming, and I think is going to hit our country like a tidal wave if we can get some legislation or get some legalization for this stuff. I think it's better than having these people on the streets.
To see it.
So what are your thoughts?
It gets to the root.
I know.
So it works. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah.
100% just, and that's not me talking.
Yeah.
You know how I am.
I know how you are.
Don't ask me what I'm about. Ask somebody who has to deal with me if it does what it's supposed to do.
I can tell you it works.
Right. I know. Yeah. I've seen. So, mm-hmm. So Marcus, you've done.
That's probably the worst case going down. You know, everything happened to you. And right. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you want a test case to throw that sucker into, I was the body.
Right.
I think there's a very key part of it, though, for it to work. You have to want it to work.
Yeah, we sure
can. And you have to do the prep work and the post work that the clinic recommends. Not only recommend, I mean, mandates.
Right.
And if you choose not to do that, it's not going to work.
It talks about that in this film.
I do think that that's very important for people to know, that it's not just another high or another drug just to have fun with. And
you can't abuse it.
Yeah, and just to say, oh, I did it and it didn't work. Well, did you do the prep work and the post work? Because correct. If you chose not to do that, of course it's not going to work.
Sure.
It's a collective.
Correct. But I think awareness and getting rid of the stigma of some of these compounds that can help people in the mental health space, mm-hmm. it starts there. So my interest in investing in the film was when I think that the film was well done, well documented. They started filming in 2018, followed a lot of the veterans down to the clinic in Mexico where they're doing these ceremonies. And not just the veterans, but then they also followed heroin addicts and told their stories. Then they do a lot on the science, and the researcher that took the chance on this and did the clinical trial out of Stanford. He his research data is very compelling. And
I tell you what, he got lucky with that one, or not, however you want to look at it, because his study is going to pay off.
Well, just like a published. Lot of those
guys who get into something, they research something, and it doesn't go anywhere. Right. He's got lucky.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. And I think he took a chance, a little bit of a...
Whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
God shine on him.
Reputational right. chance yeah, on yeah, it. Yeah. So kudos to him. I've been listening to a lot of the podcasts that he's been out talking about it. Read the paper. I'm a researcher.
The numbers coming out of it. That's right. All of you, the minds, when they see those numbers, and when you read the stats, and when you look at the scans.
Right. Yep.
I mean,
yeah,
the brains. Everything's everything to those that shows up.
Right, right.
And you can't deny it.
Right. And my husband's a neuroradiologist, so.
He's the neuroradiologist. You keep leaving that part out. There's probably about one on earth of that dude.
He is unique, that's for sure. But so there's a lot there about mental health, mental abnormalities, mental, you know, afflictions. From depression to suicidality to addiction to PTSD, all of these things interest me. And I think maybe the common thread is just how can I use a skill set of mine? Mine is research, building, connection, networking. Mm-hmm. I'm an organized person, so I can get behind something. I can, you know, I can get something
done. You gotta have the person pull everybody together.
But I gotta feel the passion. The passion has to come from an organic place for me. It's not, I'm not driven by
numbers.
My day job, mm-hmm. it creates the living that I have. So it's not a financially driven thing for me. So that movie is important. Yep.
You got to be, there's got to be somebody to connect those people. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Because as we get older, we go under our prospective branches. I mean, people get so good at making money. People get so good at studying science. They don't talk.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm. They stay away from each other.
Right, and they need each other.
And they need each other.
They need each other, right.
As a matter of fact, the better we get at something, the more you're like, hey, I don't need to talk to anybody else. Right. I got this. And nobody can talk to me kind of deal.
Right.
And that's not why you got good at that.
Yep, yep. Mm-hmm.
So that's why God put that other one in there to pull them together. Yep.
Well, so my role in this is more to try to bring awareness to some of what this research is showing and get it shown and seen by the right people that can make a big difference so that more people know it's out there. I'm less called for my own experience to get onto Ibogaine. Maybe one day I would do it. I have not. And I don't know. But it is a really compelling film. So I hope you get to watch it one day. I know you will. You'll watch it one day.
What's the name? Can you say that?
Ibogaine.
Is the name. Of the film.
At this moment, yes. So that could, it's in post-production. That could change. So I don't want to lock that down. Don't hold me to that. But
I'll be interested to see how you get it done because I don't know how to explain it. No words for what that is.
Yeah, Sherry asked me if you.
I would. Would you tell me?
In the name of it, people say that, but I listen to y'all talk. But
is it like what they say in the film that you almost have this movie of your life?
Absolutely. It is.
So you go when you take this compound, you almost have
everything
this,
you have up in there. It puts in a movie for you.
Okay, for your whole life,
everything,
and so you get to revisit it. Maybe look at it in
It'll
a
take
different,
you further back than that too.
Even before, really.
Yep, and it clean. You know, I don't ever try to speak.
I understand.
I'm real cautious about that.
Oh yeah.
But that's what definitely.
So you feel like it takes you back to the beginning, and you can see the
right
root
where you
of,
need to go.
Right.
Is what it does.
And so
I had one guy tell me, he's like, "Hey man, it gets to the root. It gets to the root of whatever is bothering you. Not all those layers you put in there that other people have put in there, that life's put in there.
Right.
All the substances you stuck in this.
Right.
This perfect, you know, this creation of what to survive down here. I mean, it's just like anything else. It takes a beating.
So let me ask you this. I mean, Marcus, it's well known that you've been through a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I know your story in detail. We're pretty close. Do you feel that Ibogaine has been a major help to your cognitive balance and the way you look at the world and how you process what happened? And
absolutely, best thing ever happened to me. I was fighting and screaming and bucking and spitting and everything when y'all threw me in there. I didn't want to go at all. I did not want to go in there. But once I got in there and it got a hold of me, then I was like, oh, you know, I shouldn't go anywhere. I couldn't do anything. So then it just made me focus. And then once I saw what I was supposed to be doing, I was like, okay, all right.
Was it scary?
Absolutely.
You're not scared of much.
I'm not scared of anything.
I know, but you're... But
that, I have respect. There's a difference.
Okay.
Like there's men on this planet that I have a respectful fear of. Right. Kind of deal. It's like that, but to an extreme to where I understand great power.
Right.
And when I see it, when I look at it, and when it's around me, I can feel it. So that's where this comes from.
Is it... And do you... When you come out of it, do you feel... relief,
brand new.
So it's an instant, like after this experience, it's instantaneous that you feel the effects of.
Imagine going in the gym, working out real hard, mm-hmm. and next day it's kind of ugh. And then when you get up, that next one though.
Okay, so you have a little bit of it.
There's a gray day.
Okay, yeah.
Right, it's what you. That's how you know something's gotten done.
Processed, right?
Right,
right.
And it's different for me. So I don't want to speak for everybody else. What happens to me is different. Okay, but yes, ma'am, that's in there.
But Marcus has also been very disciplined about his
I mean, from the time my feet hit the ground to the time they go to come off the ground, I'm in it.
Marcus, you always have been. I mean, you're an inspiration to me on things like you have inspired me to look deeper into meditation and breath work. And, you know, you taught me at times just during conversation things that I'll never forget, you know, how to strengthen mind, body, spirit, those three things about.
It showed me that. Mm-hmm. Well, it showed me that.
And then you showed that to me.
That's what it teaches me.
And I think about that all the time.
It says that to me. Yeah. It's like, hey, I'm teaching you so you can teach them.
Right.
And that's why it's so hard on me.
Right.
And I mean hard on me.
And I realized in that conversation, we had it in Tulum. We were with a group of people. You said to me, you were describing, there are a lot of people that are really strong in, you know, you get your mind, body, spirit, right? A lot of people are really strong in the mind. Very well-read scientists, but their body, you know, they don't take care of themselves.
That's right.
They don't eat right. They're out of shape. They're, you know, they don't go to church. They don't have any spirituality.
That's how you can get to them.
Right. And so then you've got people that are just body-focused people, mm-hmm. and they don't really sharpen their mind, or maybe they're, you know, or maybe you have a great strength in two of these areas. And I realized at that time, I feel like I'm in shape. I feel like I exercise my mind. I do a lot of reading, but my spirit was lacking. And so it was at that time that I started to really dedicate, like you said, a good third of my life to growing
right.
that spiritual side. You said people with this, that are strong in mind, body, and spirit are unstoppable.
That's right.
And that was what you said to
me.
There's
somebody that when they train yeah. physically and they walk in the door, but then you cut them down and they just kind of, they yeah. don't know what to do.
Right. And I think
it's unbelievable that a person with a physical stature I don't even have to hit you.
Yeah. Or they feel stupid.
So I can
or
make you
something.
Feel stupid.
Yeah.
And then your spirit. So that's kind of like, hey, man, getting in that truck, if there's a kid behind the wheel, you can't go drive that thing
right.
like somebody who's supposed to.
Right.
And if you just take a little bit of time out of your day to train each one of those, mm-hmm. or just one of them a day, or one of them a week, show that sucker some attention.
Right.
Because life by design will do that. It'll yeah. eventually beat your body down to where all the thing left is just to read and to kind of, that's how that
Absolutely,
happens.
Absolutely, yeah.
In the beginning, as a young student, to train that, nobody. My kids hate going to church. I know, I can see it in their face because they don't know what they're doing.
Right.
They got no
yeah.
idea why they're in there.
Right.
And all I'm doing for them is creating a habit.
Right. Yeah.
Period. They don't know what those words mean. They don't have enough
yep.
life down here.
Yes.
They look to me for that.
Right.
And sometimes I don't want them to see what that
right.
part of life's going to drop on them. Not yet.
Right.
That's why we exist.
And don't you agree that spiritual part of your life can look like anything?
It can be
going to church, or it can be just spending time in meditation and really looking.
That's the biggest part, like the breathing part. First yeah. thing you do when you check in down is take a breath.
Right.
So is the last thing you do.
Right.
And spend some time exercising that sucker. You do. That's
mm-hmm.
what exercising is.
Mm-hmm.
You're actually trying to get your body worked up to where that breath will come out and back in to where you can exercise
right.
it.
Right.
And when they started explaining it to me like that.
Yeah,
I was like, okay, I could see it,
right?
Because it shows me,
mm-hmm.
and I was like, okay, now I understand, and then it gives me the ability to explain it logically,
right? Yep.
Well, I mean, just simple logic to where when I say something, someone's like, oh, I didn't see it like
uh-huh,
that.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, that's the base model,
right?
Then everything else grows from there,
right? And that's what happened to me when we had that conversation. And so I've been ever since then really working that side of my life that I felt was lacking, and it's been amazing.
It's unbelievable what it does.
Yes. So it's thank you for that.
You're welcome.
I didn't know.
Yeah. And you see these wonderful people, and they're great at it, but if you could just say, man, if you said that to me that a minute ago or earlier
right.
in my life, it would have been different.
Yeah, you didn't know that story.
I didn't know the story.
I mean, you probably remember the conversation, but
that's right.
You didn't know how much it
stuck. I didn't know exactly.
Yeah, you gave me the breath work app, and so I still use it to this day.
I'll call some of them. I'll ask. I always ask. Like, hey, you want me to stay on you? You got to tell them. You got to invite me mm-hmm. to do that. Like Governor Perry, I'll call his ass. I'll be like, have you been doing your work? A lot of my guys, I'm like, yeah, you know. And then as many funerals as we've been to now,
I know,
the one thing that I always heard when they talk about people is that he always stayed on me. Or like they told me, he didn't tell me what I wanted to hear, he told me what I needed to hear.
Right.
That's the that's the good stuff about life.
Right.
And I've been to so many of them now, like, well, maybe I should start acting like that before I die.
Mm-hmm.
So I think every time I walk across somebody, I was like, man, if he's going to talk about me at his funeral, what's he going to say? Because I've heard people say, tell me what they said at my funeral.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
I've already been dead once.
Oh, yeah.
So when that happened to me, I was like, okay. You know, that little dash that Fleming talks about, Chad, when he's like, you're going to get that dash down here.
Oh, right. Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm. When he taught me that.
Huh.
So I was like, okay, I know what I need to do.
Yeah.
I just started. No, man, it changes everything.
So, on a lighter note, you have also invested in a ranch where you hope one day to be able to, if it ever gets legalized, to do some healing there.
Yeah, so, and Hunter, this will be a fun conversation for us because you've actually got to visit this place.
Definitely.
You need a lawn guy? Because I saw the pictures of it the other day. We're both moving up there.
Mm-hmm. I'm telling you. It's pretty magical. Yeah, so just outside of Telluride, Colorado.
Thank God you got that. How awesome. When they told me that you're the one that did that, I was like, good girl, man. That's awesome.
Yeah, so Telluride, Colorado is a really special place. I've been going there for over 20 years for ski trips for family. So know it well, and a home came up for sale a few years ago, and it was under construction, but it was on a 70-acre parcel of land. And what's so magical about it is its location. It sits at the base of the Wilson Peak, which is the mountain range that's on the Coors Light can. So it's basically
That's where that is.
Yeah,
you get a perfect view of those mountains.
Start drinking Coors Light.
Better, you'll have to put it up on the website.
I'll throw the picture. If I drank beer anymore, it would be Coors Light.
Coors Light, I tell you. Yeah. So it's called Silver Pick Ranch. It's a 70-acre new construction home where you can go get away. It's about 24 minutes away from Telluride, the city of Telluride. So it's an easy drive.
Great little town.
Great little town. It's year-round. They always say people come to ski and then they stay for the summer because every week is full of a festival. They have from jazz festival to music.
It's a beautiful place.
Bluegrass festival. There's a movie film festival. It's great culture. The skiing, you can attest this. You're a skier, mm-hmm. Hunter. It's super steep, so there's a lot of challenging skiing there. They call it the Swiss Alps of the United States because the mountain range is a lot is taller, steeper. Mm-hmm. So the skiing is challenging in a good way. There's also a lot of family-friendly runs, good education. And the pillow-to-ski-lift ratio is such that there's not enough – you can't ever really get so thick of crowds that it's very hard. You're standing in line all day. So it's always – even during peak season, it's bearable with the amount of people that come. Has an amazing 4th of July, spectacular. It's a box canyon. Old story is Butch Cassidy robbed his first bank there before he left town. He's sure he was in with the sheriff to let him out. But so they've got a lot of history in that town. But Silver Pick Ranch, good food. Silver Pick Ranch is a place to get away. There's nearby snowmobiling, horseback riding. There's a lake where you can it's fly fishing. Mm-hmm. One of the best fly fishing locations.
Oh, now you're speaking my language.
So
we've been talking about doing that for my 50th. That's what I want to go do is go fly fishing.
And you know where you're going.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
I'm going to Silver Pick.
Yep. We'll have to go before my 50th then, now that we got a place. Yeah.
So if your listeners want to go to silverpickranch.com and take a look, it's there. You can rent it. You can have weddings there, events.
I'll be the fishing guide.
Yep.
Hunter will be out there.
You've also got an Instagram. You can go check out all the pictures and content. I'm telling you right now, this house is gorgeous. I mean,
good
spacious
job,
too. I mean, the views, the interior, exterior, everything about it.
It's not great. Yeah, it's simple. It's simple, easy. You can. It's livable.
It feels homey. Mm-hmm. Like I was there for the first time I stepped in the doors. I felt like I was home.
And tying it back into what we talked about earlier, you know, if Colorado is one of the first places to legalize some of these type of compounds for healing, it'd be a great place to send someone to go heal.
Yeah.
You know, so I could envision that kind of all coming together if the cards align there. So,
some of the guys talking that we got to go down somewhere else to get fixed.
Yeah.
But even before that, renting it as a group just for a mental health break just to go get away.
Yeah.
And it's on Airbnb. Mm-hmm. If you go on silverpickranch.com, you can look at it and maybe go with some girlfriends or something.
And Hunter's going to be doing some curated visits there. So if you wanted to go get away and need someone to guide you on what to do in the area, he's your guy.
Yeah. Come with me.
He is a travel planner. Aficionado. Yes, absolutely.
That's good. It's my favorite thing to do.
Yeah, he's one of our first guests. It's great to have
help
you
put up the TVs.
You did. Yes, the TVs are up because of his muscle. So thank you for that. Appreciate you.
Of course.
He couch surfed that first week. We just moved in, did some skiing.
The
on
couches
his own.
Are comfortable.
How was the skiing up there?
Oh, it was gorgeous.
Was it great?
Yeah, so the first few days I went alone and kind of just did my own thing, checking out all the hardest runs I could find. Mm-hmm. And then Mark ended up joining me on the last day. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I got to show him different places that I went, and we had a fun time.
Yeah.
Okay. What's the population of Telluride?
Ooh.
Mm. Hunter.
Look that one up. Don't know. It's.
Well, that's a question. When I do that, that means.
Locals that live there, it's small.
It's small, right?
It's small. Yeah.
It is. 2,595.
There you go.
Perfect.
Yep. It is small. And it exploded 2,500. During COVID, so it brought a lot of people in. And there's some, I think Oprah's got a large compound there. Tom Cruise did. I think
we'll
he sold.
We'll have to go see her.
Yeah.
Tell her I'm in town.
Tell her that the Jick Book.
Yeah, Jick Book needs to join her favorite things list this year, so... We need Dave Ramsey to get behind it, too. So
yeah.
Let's go around to all the houses, knock on the door, and tell them we're in town.
Yeah.
Might as well.
We'll make that happen soon. We talk about it a lot.
Yeah. We're going to do it.
Yep.
Well, thank you, Sherry.
Thank you all for having me. It's been fun.
Thank you so much for coming down. Everybody out there, thank you for listening and tuning in. We will see you next week.